Marika, if you would, could you do a roll call?
Yes, I will. Today, 27th of April, the RIP Working Group call. On the call, we have Greg Aaron, chair of the group, Barry Cobb, Roland Perry, George Kirikos, Nacho Amados, Michael Connor, Faisal Shaw, Mike Rodenbaugh, Philip Corwin, Bo Brandler, and for staff, we have Margie Milam and myself, Marika Konings.
Okay. And is there anyone on Adobe that isn't logged into the call yet? I think I see James Bladle.
Yes, I just joined. Sorry.
Okay. And I think Martin Sutton says he's having a little trouble on his conference line, but he's on a connect. Okay. Well, hopefully they'll be able to join us in both media. Now that we've done our roll call, what we're going to do today is we'll do our basic housekeeping. We'll roll into the definition of abuse. And Marika has put the latest document up in Adobe Connect. It's also on the group wiki. We'll see how far we get on that. And then, assuming there's time, we may also start to work a little bit on a sub question. Marika, the housekeeping note I had was SOIs. To find out if there's anybody who hasn't yet submitted one.
I need to check back, but I think one outstanding one is from Jeff Newman. I think he hasn't sent anything, but he might have submitted for other working groups, so to verify with him if those are correct. And I just need to check through the list. I think most people send their statement of interest after receiving the reminder. I think Martin Sutton is actually one of the ones who didn't send one in either yet. But after this call, I'll double-check and send a note to those that haven't submitted to remind them. I don't know if you want to give them a deadline of some kind or...
Yes, we should, since we've already asked for those by the middle of last week. We'll just pursue those folks offline.
Okay.
As you said. Okay, that'd be...
But I have to say, I think most responded to the reminder and have submitted it, and they're all posted on the wiki. If you go to the main page at the bottom, underneath the list of members, there's a link that takes you to the statements of interest. And maybe just put a request here as well. If anything changes during the course of the working group, please provide your update to me, and I can update the wiki accordingly if there are any changes.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. Well, let's move into our... definition of abuse, and you'll see that in the document that Marika prepared for us. It's on screen, or you can get it off of the wiki. Since that's been up for the last couple of weeks, there's been relatively little discussion of it on the board. Mike O'Connor said basically he liked it, and George and Roland had a little bit of conversation about it. But otherwise, relatively little discussion. So I'd like to know, is that because you like it or not? So first I want to open up. For those of you who have not yet expressed an opinion, is there anything about this definition that you would like to see changed? Or does it raise any questions? So I'd like to open that up to the group. Barry?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just agreeing with the definition. I like it. Once we have the predicate or enabler prerequisite term used and defined.
Okay. James?
Also indicating agreement with it and with Barry's statement about the predicate.
Okay. Richard?
Yeah, I think it looks good, but once we get into some actual potential cases of abuse, I think it'll be, you know, what I'm looking forward to doing is, as we look at some actual case studies, maybe we'll come back and modify this definition. Because it's a little, at the moment, for me, it's a little academic. I want to see some actual potential examples.
Okay. George?
Yeah, I just want to agree with the last comment that we should... go around after we've reviewed the various examples of abuse and see whether the definition works or not.
Okay. Anyone else?
This is Bo Brendler. I'd have to agree with the earlier comment about the need or the interest in some real-life examples to work with or to analyze.
Okay. James?
Yeah, just a question for Richard, Bo, and George. Do you feel that we can make a definition that's sufficiently watertight that you're just looking to test it against some real-world examples, or you actually are foreseeing that it might fall short in some areas? I'm just curious as to what you're looking for to come out of that. I think it's a good idea. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding it correctly.
George, here. It's the first part that it needs to be watertight, because otherwise it can be abused by various parties or misused.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. So there's a desire among some to kind of road test the definition against some specific examples and see if it holds up or if it contains any deficiencies. And by the way, we still have one open question, which is the word. Should we use predicate or enabler or prerequisite? I'd like to propose that we work on that word so we have a working definition at least, and then during the course of our work we'll talk about some specific examples. We can match it up against the definition. If we find any deficiencies, then we can work on the definition some more. But what I'd like to do is have something to go on for the moment at least. Does that sound okay? So, the question is, do we use predicate or enabler or prerequisite? To recap the conversation about that, the idea was predicate is a highly technical term in logic, evidently. It's not a term that is easily understood. A rough synonym might be prerequisite. In other words, you can use something to carry out the abuse. Let me try to think of an example. If you want to spam, for example, you need to get a list of names that you can send spam to. So how do you get lists of names to spam? There could be many different ways you could do that. But let's say we have a particular way of getting names, like mining the whois. It would be a prerequisite or a tool to enable the abuse. And mining the whois actually is against policy, and I think most TLDs. So that would be an example. So do people understand the word predicate, or is enabler or prerequisite an appropriate synonym?
This is Mikey.
Oh, Richard had his hand raised.
So I think I understand predicate, and I guess it makes sense to me, but I would think also that showing someone to spam, you have to have a computer. So I guess that if Dell selling me a computer would be a predicate to spam as well, using that definition. Would that be correct?
Well, having a computer by itself does not cause harm. So I would think no.
Right, but getting a list of versus by itself does not cause harm either, right?
Okay. See, Mike, go ahead.
I just want to pick on enabler. I think we want to drop that one out. I sort of dug into the definitions of that word and found them pretty unsatisfactory, many of them coming from the, you know, a different community. So leaving the predicate prerequisite debate to others, I'd just like to lobby against enabler.
Okay. George?
I just want to answer the question about the computer being a predicate to spam. That's fine that it's caught by the first part of the definition, but it's not caught by the second part, because owning a computer isn't illegal or illegitimate or otherwise considered contrary to the intention. So I think the definition is fine to have the word predicate, because it's not sufficient to just have the predicate. You need something else, which is part two.
Okay. Nacho on the notes also said that predicate sounded precise to him. And Nacho, would you like to add anything?
I think that, just what I said, that the fact that it sounds too technical should not prevent us, because, the definition is composed of two phrases, and the first one is, yes, we need something to act illegally, and we are doing it. We are not just supposing that everything that could be a predicate should be illegal. And just by allowing you to do something does not mean that it should be illegal. Both conditions must be fulfilled.
Okay, thank you. Mike, you still have your hand raised. Anything else?
Sorry, Will Gathering. I'll remove that.
Okay, no problem. All right, so definitely not enabler. There's some support going around predicate. Is prerequisite a useful word? Okay, not hearing any takers on prerequisite. So, for now, should we use predicate in our definition then? And does it cover all the? Okay, I see a check from Mike. I see a check from Nacho and James. Faisal, George, James, Martin. Okay, Phil, Roland, let's see, Phil votes yes. Barry votes yes. Roland and Richard? Yay or nay? Mike?
Yeah, I mean, this is Richard. I'm okay for now, but again, I really want to road test this definition. So I'm still not exactly sure what predicate means.
Okay. Fair enough. I think our assumption is we'll road test this, and we have the ability to revisit it over time. Let's definitely call it a draft definition that we can road test. It looks like everybody is generally, Greg O says, yay. So it looks like we have good consensus around this to use as a draft definition. Let's go with predicate, and we will note that this can be revisited over time as we look at specific examples. Okay. And does anybody else have any other questions or comments about the definition? Okay, not seeing or hearing anybody. So, okay, that's a good step. We've got something to work with now. And that's very useful. Okay, good. Now I put now that we've got this definition.
George, can I just add one thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
for the second part, is it possible, or it says if such a purpose is disclosed, is it possible to maybe add, maybe not now, but at a later date, if such purpose is disclosed or implied? Because some of these things were back in the 70s and 80s, and there maybe would have been a technical description of, say, a certain protocol, but it might not have been explicitly disclosed. It might have been implicit.
It's a good question.
Just want to toss that out. May not be now, but maybe we'll see later as we go through examples.
Well, let's see. I guess we're talking. Well, that brings up a few questions. In cases of ICANN policies or contracts, I would think in most cases the intention would be explicit because it'll be in the policy itself, or it would have been in the development process.
All right. If we include the development process, like in the U.S. Constitution, they often refer back to the Federalist Papers, which were the discussion of how the Constitution was arrived at. So if that can be implied from the discussion, then that would be fine.
Yeah. RFCs sometimes do that, sometimes don't.
Right, that's why I want to tighten that.
Implied means not stated explicitly anywhere, I guess. Now, like you say, any policy kind of has some, you can often infer why it's that way. Do we want to get into theoretical, though, Mike?
I guess the worry I've got about implied is that it goes back to George's earlier point. That's one that you could abuse if you're not careful.
George, here again, just that it says that to the intention and design of a stated legitimate purpose, and then comma, if such purpose is disclosed. So you're not even able to get the second half of that unless the purpose is explicit right now.
Yeah, I can see that.
Some people didn't, when these policies were being developed in the 80s and 90s, they might not have been thinking ahead as well, especially when people try to game things, 20 years later.
Yeah, no, I get that too. I think it's a great idea. I just worry that at the same time someone could arrive at different conclusions than someone else with implied. One person could look at a conversation and say, yeah, that was implied, and another would say, no, it wasn't.
Like back when the 5-day grace period was created, it wasn't explicit anywhere, at least in the actual policy, that it was intended for credit card chargebacks. And so people could, say that it's legitimate, but...
And I suppose it's true that any policy, a policy statement is usually pretty narrow and straightforward. It doesn't get in, policy discussions don't get in, when you state a policy, it doesn't describe the entire history of the development of the policy.
Right.
And when you have a policy, it doesn't talk about all the implementations of that policy, or all the ways you can carry it out. To use George's example, the U.S. Constitution says what the policies are, but it doesn't say all the implications thereof, or expressions thereof.
So where does that, if we're following that analogy, then where would those implications be thrashed out?
Well, does in the end, does it come down to whether the purpose is legitimate or not? And how is that determined?
Right. I mean, the nice thing about disclosed is that at least there's something to point at. It's sort of to continue on with the legal analogy, it's legislated as opposed to implied, which is just subject to interpretation, and one way to do that is to take it to the courts. And then when the court decision is arrived at, it's disclosed.
Well, in the in the add grace period example, you know, we had a PDP to talk about domain tasting and so on, and it seemed pretty clear that the add grace period was created for a very specific reason, and I don't know for sure, but I'm assuming people discussed that during that PDP, and it was pretty clear that it was for the registrars could recover from mistakes or deal with add credit cards. It wasn't disclosed in part, you know, in a contract or in the process of creating the AGP, but, or maybe it was, I don't know, probably was. I think it was explicit or disclosed. That group probably figured, yeah, it was talked about, that's what the add grace period's for, and then they determined that there was a contrary use or an unintended use of that grace period.
So the question then becomes is, I don't want to split hairs over this because I kind of like the idea as implied to be able to catch those changing events that George was describing. At the same time, it makes me a little nervous to leave the process for resolving those disputes sort of undefined.
Well, one thing it would probably behoove us and future groups to do is if we have an abuse or something we think is an abuse, it certainly implies you have to go back and do your research into the history and see if there's any relevant background material about the purpose of the thing. And then in the end, if you are going to go into a policy process, the community through a working group or some other process has to look at the thing and they make a call, and there's an ICANN process to determine whether there should be a policy or not, and if so, what that policy is. There is I don't want to call it a legislative process or a constitutional interpretation process, but there's a process to determine whether a specific thing is abusive or not and get people's input on it.
So the definition that we're using in that case could trigger one of those conversations? Is that what you're thinking?
Maybe. I see Richard's hand's raised.
Yeah, I don't think I like the implied at the moment, because as I read two, these are all or scenarios. So we're saying that the action has to cause harm. That's one, right? And then two, it's got to be either illegal or illegitimate or contrary to the intention, state of design, etc. So, in fact, the way it reads at the moment, it doesn't even have to be illegal or illegitimate to be abuse under this definition, right? It's just got to be, it's got to cause harm, and it's got to be contrary to the stated purpose. So my feeling at the moment is that's pretty encompassing, and I wouldn't want to add another piece there that says implied purpose, because I agree with whoever spoke a few minutes ago. That's a very subjective thing, I think.
To throw my two cents in, I think Richard's comment makes a lot of sense. And illegitimate is another word that can be relied on. Maybe there's the question of who decides it's illegitimate. But like I said, maybe that's through a PDP or something else. Any other thoughts? I'd like to know and use the check marks or X's, but is there support right now for leaving number two the way it is? Please indicate your thoughts. And Phil also has asked for the floor.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to, under this definition, I'm not saying I disagree, I just think it's something we should focus on. It's possible that something could be considered abuse that was simply a predicate of harm, but there was no actual harm yet, and was not illegal or illegitimate, was simply considered contrary to an intention or a stated legitimate purpose. So that's kind of the lowest level that would trigger this, an action that was simply a predicate where harm had not yet occurred and was not illegal or illegitimate, was simply considered contrary to an intent or design of a purpose. So I just put out for the group whether, you know, just to focus on whether that's a threshold that should be encompassed. I'm not saying it shouldn't. I'm just saying that's the kind of the minimal definition of abuse that could occur under this proposal.
Okay. Roland?
Yeah, I'm just unhappy. I have no clarity on who it is, what person or organization is actually going to state what is a legitimate purpose. So I can't sort of agree or disagree this because I simply don't understand who's doing the stating here.
Okay. Well, in some cases, it might already be clear, I guess, whether it's an abuse. If there's an existing policy on the topic. Other thoughts? Mike Rodenbaugh, for example, do you want to bring in your legal mind?
My legal mind's functioning a little slow this morning, Greg. I must be honest. You know, I tend to agree with what's been said by Phil and others on this point so far. I haven't felt the need to speak.
Okay. I'll throw out an example. Let's assume for the purposes of conversation that everyone agrees that spam is an abuse. One of the predicates to spam might be mining the who is. So one question is, this group could say that mining the who is a bad thing and measures to prevent mining of the who is should be considered by GNSO. Or in that case, we would be addressing an abuse in general, and specifically we would be making a recommendation about one of the ways, one of its predicates. That would be an example. Now you have to have agreement that spam is a problem worthy of being dealt with, for example, in that case. And Roland asks, Roland, do you want to take the floor?
Well, yes. I mean, I think actually using spam as an example is quite difficult because there's a lot of disagreement in this arena anyway. But it's definitely the case that data protection law in Europe says that you can only use personal data under certain conditions, and you can only gather it and process it under certain conditions. And it's perfectly clear that if you go around scraping websites, mining who is, and doing all other sorts of non-consensual gathering of personal data in the form of email addresses in order to use it for spam, it's just simply against the law.
In Europe. But there's another question, which is, in an ICANN context, you know, there are contracts, for example, that say you're not supposed to use who is information for sending bulk unsolicited email. So that's an existing policy or contractual item. So in the ICANN context, it's not supposed to be done. And that's a contractual thing where the various jurisdictions may not necessarily matter.
I mean, they matter. I mean, for example, if some country came up with a law that specifically allowed people to mine the database, the people in that country would be able to do it, regardless of what ICANN said. Right?
Yeah. And Spain's probably not a great example either, that's for sure. That's the one I could come up with.
But I don't think we get very far if we start looking at choice of law types of issues. It's going to get bogged down. I don't see why that's really relevant to what we're doing today anyway.
Mm-hmm. George?
I was just going to follow up on that, but Mike didn't really want us to. But, you know, if you have something, let's say, for example, pornography, adult pornography that is legal in the United States, say hardcore pornography, but it's, say, illegal in Iran. Under this definition, it causes actual harm, according to some academics, although it's a debate. It's definitely illegal in some countries, and so under that definition, it's considered abuse. Now, what's to be done about it? Maybe needs number three, number four.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, Gretchen Olive is now entering the meeting.
Thanks, Greg.
It doesn't even need to be nudity, but, you know, talking about the King of Thailand or something like that.
Yeah. Well, this gets into a crux of one of the problems we have to wrestle with, which is every jurisdiction has different laws. Or even if they are concerned with a particular issue, they'll define their laws around that differently. One question is, does it matter generally or in a particular case? Because what ICANN has and how it does its business is through contracts.
Right.
Mike, and Mike, again, you have some experience here, so jump in if you want to. But, for instance, ICANN has created certain language that applies to registrants and registrars, and other language applies to registries. And that's binding on those folks no matter where they are.
Exactly.
Like if you're a registrar, you usually have registrants in many, many different countries. And each of those countries has different laws. But if you're a registrant, you're entering into a contract with your registrar, and you're agreeing to be bound by the contract between you and your registrar. So, in some ways, the laws of the local country might be an issue, but in general, what's really at issue is the contract you've decided to enter into. Let me throw that out. Nacho?
Yes. I think we should take into account that we have to talk about registration of use and not on what is legal or illegal, because as you said, in our contract with ICANN, talking about ourselves, our .cat registry, we have to abide by that contract. But there are some things that could be against the Spanish and the European law, that just by having the contract, that law does not disappear. And that law is enforceable over the contract. So perhaps we should focus on what is against the standard users, or what we want to be a fair use of the registration policies, and not what is legal or illegal.
Okay. Mike Rodenbaugh?
Yeah, completely. Just want to kind of echo what you were saying, Greg, and what I think Nacho was just saying. What we're tasked to do is look at the contractual relationship between the various parties in the chain. It's almost without regard to what law we're talking about, because we as the ICANN community basically create these policies that we expect everybody to abide by that own a GTLD name. You know, nobody in the world has a right to own or operate a GTLD name. It's a privilege that is given through ICANN and through a registry and through a registrar to a registrant. And that privilege comes with certain obligations that are set out in the contract. So I really, I every time we start talking about one country's laws over another, I just feel like we're going down a rat hole that we're never going to get out of. We don't need to worry about that. We need to worry about what should global standards be and how should those be developed.
George has raised his hand.
I'd have to tend to disagree with that because the .tel people, for example, that registry is located in England, and they explicitly made reference to WHO's policies being against, you know, the British law according to the Privacy Commissioner. So these jurisdiction issues have already come up and probably will come up in the future.
But there's nothing that we can do about them.
Well, and actually, the WHO is question has been dealt within the ICANN context. ICANN actually has a process for examining and normalizing those WHO is issues. If a local jurisdiction doesn't allow a registry or a registrar to adhere specifically to the ICANN contract that's involved. So ICANN actually came up with a process for dealing with the WHO is thing, recognizing that some of these parties might run into issues. But again, it was dealt with in an ICANN context.
Same thing with the UDRP. I mean, yeah, we try to accommodate differences in different countries' laws, but, you know, for our purposes, I don't see what benefit we're getting by looking at country versus country.
Nacho, you have your hand raised?
Yes. Coming back to .cat and again regarding the WHOIS question, we are also in negotiations with our own data protection agency. But again, that is not domain name registration abuse, in my regard, in my opinion.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. I mean, I'll throw in my two cents. I think we're talking about the ICANN context. Of course, this is an ICANN working group, and that's what the GNSO is about. I think ICANN is mainly about its contracts and contractual relationships, and that's where we ought to put our focus. So anyway, we let's go back to the question we had a few minutes ago, which was, can we work with number two as it currently is? George, you raised your hand.
Yeah, if the question is, if we're dealing with contracts, where does it say, for example, that child pornography is anything in the ICANN contracts? Like, you're definitely going to come up with, you know, things that aren't in any ICANN contracts that are illegal, that have to be...
I think
that are still considered abuse, I think, by most.
Well, the question is that an abuse first? And we'd have to look at that. And then the second question after that is it within ICANN's scope to do something about? Those are both unknowns right now, as far as our work is concerned.
I think we might be stuck because, you know, we'll have to go through the definitions, the examples, and come back to it. But things like phishing, there's nothing in ICANN contracts about identity theft and all these things. And I'm going to come back.
Right, but there is in the contracts things about illegal acts and malicious conduct.
Yeah, but those contracts don't say...
At least in most of the contracts, all except for a couple.
Oh, ComNet or the big one.
ComNet, yeah.
Well, we'll definitely get into that at some point because the group's been asked to look at the variances across existing contracts.
Yeah.
Richard has raised his hand.
Yeah, just getting off the national law issue back to what Phil said a few minutes ago, I think he's right, and I think that the definition we have now is too loose in that low-case scenario. So what Phil said was that the way it reads now, something could just be a predicate to harm, so harm hasn't actually occurred, and it could just be being used in a way that's contrary to the stated purpose. So there's no harm, it's just a predicate to harm, and it's just being used in a way contrary to its purpose, and we're calling that abuse. So I think that's too low a threshold.
Well, in my reading of number one says that if it's abuse, it has to be causing harm.
Or be a predicate to that harm.
So that right, or so that the word or there.
Harm, right. I mean,
there has to be harm that is caused.
And if we understand predicate, it means that harm doesn't have to have occurred, but what the predicate has enabled or facilitated in some way the potential for the harm. So the way I read number one, Adele sold me the computer, so now I have, there is a predicate action to me sending spam now by them selling me that computer.
Well, is spam the abuse?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, spam in this case would be a known thing that does cause harm.
Okay.
Right. But I think the way the definition reads at the moment, if I'm reading it correctly, is that I bought the computer from Dell, and they gave me this computer, so it's a predicate to spam now. That's my understanding of predicate. So number one has been reached in terms of the definition. And now, if I use that computer in a way contrary to the intended purpose of the computer, then abuse has happened. So if I use the computer as a boat anchor, I've just caused abuse to this definition.
Well, you know, you're assuming some policy that outlaws the use of computers for boat anchors.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that one, so number one's been met. Do we agree on that, that it's a predicate to spam if I buy the computer?
Not necessarily. I think you're getting to the realm of ridiculous, frankly. But...
Okay. I see Phil's hand raised.
Yeah, I was just saying, maybe what we should be talking about, since this is the registration abuse policy group, is I don't think we want to be reaching actions like buying a computer. That's too far removed from the purpose of this group, and so maybe we should be talking about a definition of registration abuse, which would include, as part of that definition, is an action that, one, occurs in the context of domain name registration, and then add the other two. I mean, and that way you eliminate all these extraneous things like purchase of a computer that have nothing to do with the domain name registration process.
Okay. I see Richard, Mike, and Phil's hands raised. Are those old or new?
Mine's old.
Mine is there, because I was going to try to explain, as I think Richard and I are looking at that first clause differently. I mean, there has to be harm that is shown. And then, yes, the activity that we think may or may not be abuse doesn't have to be the actual harmful activity. It can be something that leads up to it. But in the end, there still has to be that harm. So it's not that buying a computer could ever be illegal. It's using that computer to send spam that could be abusive.
I agree with you, but I don't think that's what it says now.
Yeah.
If I could go and get a list of... If I get a list of email addresses from the Who Is myself, then is that a predicate to harm? I guess that's my question.
Well, yes, I think it could be.
But I haven't done anything with those addresses. I just collected them.
Right. But
so
if
that's
you've
a predicate
done that contrary to the intention of the purpose of the Who Is database, then you've committed abuse.
Okay, but I haven't done anything with them. I just collected them. I'm interested in the data. I'm doing a data analysis of names. That's not contrary to the purpose, right?
Right. If you're using them to market and send spam, then it is.
Right.
Phil, you have your hand raised?
Well, I think to read this definition the way Mike is interpreting it, I think you need to... it would have to read, or is a predicate of such actual harm. You would need another word in there to say that real harm has to have been created to read it the way he's saying he reads it.
I think that if that helps clarify it by saying such actual harm in the second clause, I'd be fine with that.
So that proposal was to say a predicate of such actual harm? Is that correct?
Yes. Or actual and substantial harm, just to copy the phrase.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Mikey here. I'd just point to Faisal's comment in the chat that it may be material.
Or predicate act, all right, and Faisal said, or a predicate act that is material to such harm.
I like that.
Maybe leave the actual harm notion in as well, so predicate to such.
Actual and substantial harm.
Yeah.
Okay, Dutch. Okay. Okay, so I'm gonna put that in the comments. It would be or a predicate act that is material, such actual and substantial harm. How does that work?
I like that.
Does that kind of close up the language that in a way that people are comfortable with? Let me pull your feelings about that phrase, or a predicate act that is material to such actual and substantial harm. If you could use the text or the X's to indicate your feelings about that. See, 11 and, or, oh, Richard has a question.
Sorry, I meant to raise my hand.
Okay.
But actually, now that you mention that, let me ask a question. So the addition of the word actual now means that harm has happened, it has to have happened. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. This is Mikey.
Okay, so I think that solves the concern that I had before.
Okay.
Send my hand into a tick.
So I see 12 and no X's. Phil, Roland, do you have any feelings about it?
Well, it's Roland here. I'm not sure that you actually need to repeat the actual and substantial, because that's what such means.
Does it hurt anything to repeat it?
No, it doesn't hurt, I suppose. But that's why I'm not voting for or against it, really.
Okay. No, not elegant, is what you're saying. Okay.
Well, I think we'll just end up with a definition that just gets longer and longer and longer, repeating things that it does no damage to repeat, but which just makes it more difficult to understand if you come to it afresh.
Okay. All right. Well, it looks like we have no demurs. So let's... now, George, are you suggesting something else?
Yeah. The only thing that you really added, just to follow up on the last speaker, is that it's the word material, so you can use that as an adjective or as a material predicate act. What's the term?
Well, if you use the actual and substantial, then substantial takes care of material.
Well, this is, the actual and substantial harm is referring to the harm. The word material was in relation to predicate. That's a material predicate act.
An act.
The material, well, yeah, the material is only modifying the word predicate act.
Yeah, that's right. This is Mikey. I agree with that. The material refers to something different than the actual and substantial.
So, George, how would the whole phrase read? Could you put it in the chat?
Okay, it would be abuse is an action that causes actual and substantial harm. Now, see how slow I type? Or is a material predicate of such harm.
Causes actual and substantial harm, or is a material predicate of such harm. So you've removed the word actual.
Yeah, no, the he's removed the word repeat.
The word actual is still there because it's referring to the harm.
Yeah.
The harm is the actual and substantial harm.
Okay.
It's already caught in the first one.
Okay, got it. Okay, so we have a couple of options now. We have the one we just voted on, which everybody felt good about. Let's now poll what George has posted. You think it? I guess the question is it superior? So use a checkbox if you think that the version that George has just posted is a better alternative. Okay. Looks like there's agreement. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 checks. Richard has raised his hand.
So I'm getting wrapped around the axle again on whether the predicate has, if harm has actually occurred, because I'm looking at George's definition here, and it's not clear to me that there's been actual harm, that something that was just materially a predicate to potential harm has happened. So what is the case there?
But the word such is capturing that, I believe. The word such would include the words actual and substantial harm.
Causes actual or substantial harm, or is a material predicate of such harm.
Okay.
So harm has happened for sure, huh?
And the harm is actual and substantial.
Right.
Okay, so I'm good with that.
Okay. All right, looks like we'll go with that then.
Consider it causes actual and total blindness, or is the material predicate of such blindness? That blindness still has to be total blindness, for example.
Okay. And that's what the word predicate means? Because I like what... I thought what Mike had put in made it clear to me anyway. Or is the material predicate of such actual harm? To me, that removes any doubt. But if you don't
harm
think...
just refers back to such actual and substantial harm. That's what, you know, you could repeat it there if you want, but then Roland doesn't like the repetition. So, I mean, it says what you think it says, Richard, at least in my opinion.
You can add the words back. It just makes it a little bit longer.
Right.
It should be identical.
Yeah, I think in all cases, no matter what it is, it has to be actual and substantial.
Yes.
Okay, that's good for me.
Okay, good. All right, we are coming up on an hour. I think we've got language now that we can move forward with. As we said earlier, We can go back and revisit this definition should we find it to be inadequate. But we've got something we can work with now as we go forward. Next week's meeting, we need to do some planning ahead of time. I would like to continue to use the list as a way of discussing things because we only meet every other week. And I would like to keep some substantial dialogue going on there so we can get some work done in preparation for the next meetings. Question is how to do that. I want everybody to get involved. I want everybody to have opinions. I want everybody to be using that list. So I think my challenge is to figure out how to best do that. What I would propose is I think the next thing we might want to look at is the scope issue. Now we've got a definition of abuse. The question is, before we go through all of our examples, we might need to figure out some general guidelines about what is in scope and what is out of scope. Some of these individual abuses that we came up with for discussion probably are definitely within GNSO scope or ICANN scope. Some of them look like, to me at least, not. So I think before we get into those specific ones, we should have an additional ruler about scope. And the scope issue is one of the main things we've been asked to look at in our charter. I'll recirculate the language that I put in today's agenda. One is a quote from the charter about figuring out these scope issues. The second quote is from the issues report. And it is an opinion, I believe, written by the ICANN Council about what's in scope and out of scope. And it gets into areas for policy making and so forth. So look for that mail from me. And I think it's going to raise some very fundamental issues for us to discuss. And between now and the next meeting, what I would like to do is thrash around those a little bit and winnow out the big questions that they raise so we can have a good conversation about those in the next call. Any thoughts on this proposal?
Yes, Mike, I would like to clarify where this quote came from in the issues report. Is this Marika's quote or is this council's quote? Either way, I think it's a little bit misleading at the end. It just seems to just be a little bit wrong to me, but we can talk about that at the appropriate time.
Okay. Yeah, and specifically, the quote came from Section 1.5 of
right.
The report. And Marika, was that provided by the legal staff?
I would need to look back, but I think this specifically refers to a section in the RAA that would provide for consensus policies concerning the registration of domain names. I mean, it comes out of a bigger section, so again, I would need to look back and put it a bit in context whether this is related to, but I can do that before the next call if that's okay.
That would be great. Because what it seems to say is it seems to give guidance or refer specifically to some to contracts and so forth. So we should figure out the origin of that language in the report.
Yeah, and make sure that it's exactly accurate. Cause I think the last sentence should say consideration of new consensus policies maybe. Would not be within scope, but I think it's clearly within scope to address policy issues that are outside the picket fence. We just may not be able to impose them as contract requirements, but they still can be discussed as policy, best practices, for example. But I just think the last sentence here doesn't really follow on the first couple of sentences.
Yeah, I think, Mike, I think you're absolutely right. I think this last sentence just relates to the issue of consensus policies. And I think there is, as we have discussed before, certain issues might fall indeed within the picket fence, and those are enforceable through contracts, but other issues can be discussed in, you know, and other options could be explored there, such as you mentioned, best practices. But again, I can provide a clarification in writing so everyone can put it in the right context, and we have you know, the right context to discuss that further.
Okay. All right. That's the kind of thing we can do, I think, fruitfully on the list to get, you know, discuss the history, figure out what big questions these things raise, and then come into the next meeting to discuss those kinds of things. Okay. All right. Well, we're a little bit past our hour. I think we made some good progress today. We've got a definition that everybody gelled around. So thank you for the very sharp comments you made today. And again, I encourage you, let's definitely engage each other on that list in our off weeks, and that'll help us have some really good focused, useful conversations on our next call. So thanks very much, and look forward to seeing you on the list.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you,
everyone.
Great job.